Welcome to the Moose Room. Dr. Brad Hines today. Emily is off doing extension-related activities. Again, she's been very busy this fall with farm health and farm safety. As we know, the fall is very important in farm safety and farm health. So she is off today. But we have a guest today, and she has been on before, Dr. Amy Lischke. And she is with Minnesota DHIA. She is the executive director of Minnesota DHIA now. I've known Amy for a long time. We were grad school office mates together and did a lot of research studies. And she worked for Procross Viking Genetics in the past, but now has taken on a new role in Minnesota DHIA. So welcome, Amy.
Thanks, Brad. Glad to be here.
For our listeners, I just wanted to discuss a little bit about DHIA and Minnesota DHIA and kind of get a picture on what's happening and what sort of offerings DHIA can provide besides milk, fat, protein, somatic cell count. I think that's always good, but there's so many other things, and we can talk about some of the things that we use from a DHIA perspective in our herd as well. So, Amy is here to give us all the knowledge about what's happening in Minnesota DHI. So, Amy, let's tell us a little bit about your what you're doing in your job and any cool things that you're working on right now and where you see it going in the future.
Well, before I jump down that line of discussion, Brad, I don't want to skip over and negate this milk, fat, protein thing that, you know, is kind of the basis of the service that DHI offers. You know, we've been doing this for over 70 years now as an organization in Minnesota DHIA. And the concept of DHIA is actually older than 70 years. You know, there were local associations coming in and testing just milk weights even before that. So this idea of collecting metrics on cows is probably close to 100 years old, wouldn't you say?
I do, yes. And it's certainly evolved across time with just doing milk and fat and evolved from to protein to somatic cell count. So it's been quite instrumental in changes in the dairy industry.
So, I mean, one thing I want to put out there for your listeners is that there's still a lot of value out there to be had in collecting milk and fat measurements on milk and weighing milk. And even today, when we compare herds on DHIA versus herds that the state collects generalized statistics on, we still see a 4,000-pound advantage for the DHIA herds. And when you multiply that out for 100-cow dairy, and let's assume $20 milk, which is pretty conservative for this time in history, those DHIA herds are gaining over $83,000 more revenue just on that increased production. So that's pretty big, and that's a big reason why herds, you know, stick with DHIA. They're using individualized cow data. You know, we're kind of in an era right now where precision data is still really interesting to a lot of folks. And you can really think of DHIA as the first in precision dairy because they were taking these individualized measurements on herds and cows for that length of time. And so farmers still use this for making breeding decisions now as the beef on dairies really picking up steam. And then even making good culling decisions as well. And that's really what's improving these herds with time, I think, is just that base of knowledge. But then to get at your question on what's new. So one thing that we've incorporated into the organization in the last probably 20 years or so is ELISA testing. And so what happens then with the monthly DHI samples that come in, we have our ELISA lab, and after it goes through the lines to do that basic milk, fat, protein, cell count, MUNs, everything else, we can put it over to the ELISA lab, and we test there for milk pregnancy, leukosis, and yonis are the three ELISA tests we're running. So farmers are seeing a lot of value these days, especially out of the milk pregnancy, and yeah. that's been a pretty big part of our business.
And I know that's pretty important to our herd. We don't use a veterinarian for preg checking anymore. You know, we had that debate maybe a year ago about whether it should be used or not on this podcast, but we have not had a veterinarian really preg check our cows in over 2 years. And we use obviously a combination of milk and blood, but it's probably a lot more milk sampling than blood just because it's more convenient. It's easy to do once a month. Sometimes we even take extra samples and we'll run milk samples to the lab just so we can preg check. So I think it's been quite important. And I think for all farmers, it's pretty easy to do milk preg checking at the time of DHI test day, and you get the results back within a couple days and you can move on with your breeding program. So it's worked out pretty well for our herd, and I suspect it has for other herds as well.
And we have a lot of herds that do the pregnancy, well, and any of the ELISAs in different ways. A lot of it does come in on the monthly sample, but as you mentioned, a lot of our herds do these special tests. And really the unique thing about the ELISA is that you don't need the whole milking uniform sample from a certified meter to take a sample for an ELISA test. All you need is just a cow side sample. And we also handle mini tubes that are suitable for that type of sample. So a farmer could go just grab a parlor sample. One squirt of milk from one teat is literally all it takes. And we can put it in these mini tubes and put them in a little bubble mailer and off to the lab. And yeah, you can get your results back in a day or two. And it's pretty fast and easy.
Now, another thing that we use in our herd is Yoni's testing. And it's been really interesting to see how that's worked. You know, even when we started Yoni testing, we were doing a lot of manure samples and then blood samples, which obviously probably is more of the gold standard in the industry. But for us, we have utilized the Yoni's testing. We actually do it twice a year and on all the cows just to make sure. And it's really helped us manage. When we first started Yoni's testing, it was probably a little bit higher prevalence than what I wanted. And really it's helped us manage by doing that. So the Yoni's testing has really helped out our herd. And I suspect it has helped out a lot of other herds at least be able to manage yonis within their herd.
Yeah, I think we've seen the state statistics of yonis really decline. I don't know if you have a figure on that, Brad, but I think a number that sticks in my head, I think, is 6%. Does that sound right to you?
It's about that, 5 to 6%. So it's gone down a little bit, but it's still probably higher than most of us want to have.
Sure. And, you know, some herds will send in their samples and they'll come back completely clean. And those are maybe the herds that only test maybe once a year or twice a year, something like that. There's other herds who are testing a lot of suspect cows month after month, too. All in, we've processed over 30,000 yoni samples in our lab over the period that we've been doing it. So I think we've made a significant dent in helping farmers achieve yonis free or reduced incidence of yonis in their herd.
Yeah, and I think it's been pretty important. You know, even here at Minnesota, Amy, I think, well, you remember Sharif, our Egyptian friend who did some yoni stuff with Minnesota DHI. This was I don't even know, 15 plus years ago, where we were looking at yonis tests from Minnesota DHI. So there has been herds yonis testing for a long time, and it's really helped, I think, shape the dairy industry and trying to figure out how to manage yonis. And I think without milk testing, I think yonis would be at a much higher level than what it is today. So what else is there? I think of leucosis testing. What about leucosis testing?
Yep, that's our third ELISA test. And to date, we've ran over 240,000 leucosis tests in our lab on the milk samples, both monthly sample and special samples, like I mentioned. I think there, you know, farmers too are looking for reducing leucosis levels in their herd, and especially now as we see the trend of cow age lengthening. Farmers are looking for more and more longevity in their cows all the time. And I think leucosis becomes a player there because leucosis tends to create early culling and maybe even some condemned carcasses. And those two factors are really really a profit buster right now in the dairy industry, where the beef prices are such that we need long-lived cows and we need a great carcass value out of every cow that's going to market. So reducing leucosis has become really important again.
Yeah, definitely. And we've done quite a bit of leucosis testing here, and it's certainly helped manage some of our herd as well. The other one that I've been quite involved with for the last couple of years is fatty acid testing. And that sort of has been, maybe it's gaining in popularity, maybe not. You know, there's been a lot of interest in fatty acid profiles. If we think about, if we go to Europe, they're running fatty acid profiles on every sample that comes in from these herds, every time that they do a DHI test. So what about fatty acid testing? Tell us a little bit about that and how herds are using that. And then I'll maybe give a little example about what we're seeing and what we're doing with it.
Yeah, perfect. What we're seeing on our lab side is a lot of farms will just want to test right now the whole herd sample or some pen samples. So anywhere maybe from like, you know, 1 to 12 samples per test day from the commercial dairies. Actually, most of our volume on fatty acids right now is still coming from research units that we partner with. So I think it's a type of circumstance where, you know, farmers will use that group sample and maybe look at different different ways they can modify the diets they're feeding cows. So we know that the fatty acid spectra that comes out of a milk sample will help indicate, you know, which partition of that of the fat percentage. So our state fat percent right now is at about 4.33%. And a way that farmers have gotten that to increase more without making diets more expensive is by tuning into the fatty acid profile that they're seeing in these pen results. But then I think there's some interest in taking it to the next level, like you mentioned, where there's going to come a time when every herd will be requesting it on every cow. And so it may come into play that there'll be a chance for farmers to weed out those poor fatty acid type of cows and use that as a genetic tool for selection. And it could be an indicator of some other types of efficiency things. We're always looking for greener cows. One way to make greener cows in the eyes of certain political forces is to look at methane production. So I think there's some early research indicating that it could be important for methane too. And Brad, I know you've done a lot of research in this area, so I'd be interested to hear what you're seeing in the research field as well.
Well, I'll give away all my secrets, I guess. But no, you know what? I saw the fatty acid profiles that DHI was interested way back in 2020, so almost 5 years ago. And of course, I emailed your predecessor, Bruce Dockbach, and back then and said, how do I get some of that data with Minnesota DHI? And it really, they were running a few herd samples, looking at herd factors, not really anything big. So it's probably grown a little bit. So we have started testing every month our cows in our herd since 2021. So I have almost 4 years worth of data. I have, you know, 30,000 probably fatty acid profiles on all these individual cows. So I have quite a bit of data. One thing that we're finding from our herd is that there are differences in our breed groups, you know, between Holstein, our Procross, and our Grays Cross cows. Interesting is that we are finding Jersey Normandy cows tend to have a little bit better fatty acid profile, higher preformed fatty acid, higher total fatty acids. There are some differences in C18, so we're getting C18, C16. So you can really dive down even in greater depth. And some of those breed groups are much higher in C18s than, say, a Holstein cow is. So, you know, you think about it from a human health standpoint, they seem to be a little more beneficial in, you know, those C18 fatty acids. So it certainly has helped us look in at breed statistics, but we've done it with our herds. You know, we have a conventional herd, we have an organic herd here. So we can really tell by looking at the nutrition factors of our herd when, you know, when you change or when you open a new silage pile, you see differences in fatty acid profiles. When we go to grass in the springtime, there's a difference in fatty acid profiles. So we can help use those profiles to help sort of manage our herd, manage our nutrition a little bit better than maybe the average herd by looking at those fatty acid profiles.
Do you hear, Brad, a lot of folks also on the consumer side interested in the fatty acids of the milk product itself as far as a human health type of venture there?
Yes, I think we do. You know, there's still a big interest from the consumer standpoint on fatty acids, even though it's, you probably don't hear a lot about that in the news or trade magazines or anything like that. But the consumers are very interested in fatty acids, especially you think about it from a C18, you know, CLA, omega-3s. That's where their interest is. And if I think we can use this data to produce a more heart-healthy milk, I think we'll be better off from a consumer standpoint too. So even though fatty acids, you know, it's kind of one of those new things that's coming down the pipeline with a lot of milk samples and DHI, I think it will be useful in the future as we move to a, you know, more consumer-based marketing and how they choose their dairy products. Because if we use that and we can say we have that data, we can market with that. And I think do much better to the consumer to say, hey, we produce healthy milk with good fatty acid profiles. So it's there and it has been for a while. DHI also has a lot of other things that are good offerings. And how about tell us about some of those? How about new ear tags? Ear tags are important to farmers, especially with the new RFID requirements and ear tag requirements that are happening. So what about ear tags and how can farmers utilize that?
I think most folks who have done DHI realize that really good ID is a cornerstone of what we provide. In fact, some people use DHI services just because they use it as a monthly calibration to make sure their ID is up to date and in check and they know where their cows are, believe it or not. So ID is something that we really build our business model off of. And tag offerings are included in that. To date, we have sold over 810,000 tags, and over 300,000 of those are RFID tags, or an RFID is the main and only form right now of electronic ID. And perhaps your listeners realize that there is a new federal mandate right now that the official ID for the U.S. now should be RFID. And so we do provide and partner with the dairy farmers to get those type of tags into cattle. We have two different varieties of RFID tags within our marketplace right now, called EarTag Central, is where we sell our tags through that website. And we also sell over the phone with the folks at our office. But this new tag offering that we have coming on the market will now be a third option. It's called Kaisley is the name of the tag. It's the plastic piece of it is manufactured in Germany. So they're a German company that's been around a long time with over 90% market share in Germany. Now they're launching here in the U.S. with DHIA services. And the tags will come in as just a blank row of tags here to that manufacturer. And then at a distributor in Iowa, it will get lasered there and custom lasered for each herd. And so it'll be much like other tag offerings. Farmers can have a customized ID number. The 840 number will get printed, and then there's ways to put other types of management information on that tag too to make it fully customizable. The advantages of this tag over perhaps some others is that RFID piece and the management tag can be put in with one set of pliers, so no need to carry around multiple pliers. It's a lighter, more flexible tag that has less breakage. And in the studies in Germany that they've done with it, it only has about a 2.1% tag loss rate over a four-year period cumulatively. So that's a lot better retention than some of the other products on the market today. And yeah, I think farmers will really grab onto this product, and it's going to be competitively priced. And we're looking at a release date now coming up here in February next year.
Oh, well, that sounds very interesting for ear tags. I think as time goes on, even for us, the more data on an ear tag, the more I like the ear tag, because instead of just having a number on it, I like to see birth dates and sires, and maybe that's just me, but I think other farmers appreciate seeing that kind of stuff on a tag too.
Yeah. And I think the RFID technology is just going to keep expanding, because as we keep handling larger and larger numbers of cattle in these herds, and even in modest size herds, time is always a premium, right? So when you can walk down a row of cows with an ID wand and just gather all that information real fast and have it linked automatically to your computer for whatever kind of work you're doing with those groups of cattle. And let's say you're going to vaccinate one day a big group of heifers. All you have to do is wave that wand within a foot of the head of the animal, capture that ID, and it filters into your data system. You do the vaccine and off you go. There's no more hand recording. So I know people maybe think that some of these new regulations are a little bit onerous in some regards, but really when you think about how fast and easy it's going to make handling these groups of cattle, I think people will come to appreciate it more and more with time.
Definitely, definitely. So what about some other things? You have some new meters coming up. You have this factors project. So tell us a little bit about some new things happening.
Yeah, so I think a lot of folks who have done DHIA for years and years have seen the same true test meter coming into their facility decade after decade. And that is true. We've really built our business around a true test meter, which still is the gold standard for milk testing, but it has some disadvantages in that it's quite labor intensive to exchange the flask, to take the sample and things like that. A new meter is under development right now in an international group, and the designers are out of Denmark and in some other countries in Europe. We have a design team over there working on this product. They're making both a sampler first, and then it also will have a meter with it. And the goal is that it will be semi-portable, so that much like the true test meter, the main kick of it is that we want it to be smaller, lighter, and faster at sampling cows. We do have a little bit of a cripple point right now in our system that we have a hard time servicing the mega dairies. And so for the future, we want to be able to work with that type of customer, and having a meter that samples more quickly will enable us to work with that type of herd as well, so that we don't have to somehow try to get 8 or 10 staff, field technician staff into a dairy on the same day. Right now, we have about 40 some odd field technicians spread across the state of Minnesota and a little bit into our borders. And those technicians serve a lot of dairies in their local area, but to be able to pull 10 of them together to work in one dairy on a single day is a really, really difficult task. So that's the main goal of why we want a more efficient meter, is to be able to serve herds and serve them well and when they want to be tested.
Yeah, that sounds quite interesting. I know I talk with our DHI tester, and she helps on some of the larger herds, and it can be a challenge, especially when these cows are moving through parlors quite quickly. You don't have time to really think about what you're even doing, let alone write the cow ID down. So what about your new factors project? What are we happening there?
Yeah, we have a really unique opportunity this year to be involved in a project that was started by the Council on Dairy Cattle Breeding and in partnership with National DHIA. The goal here is to readjust the factors that we use for milk and fat and protein percentages when cows are not milked on a perfect 12-hour interval and also to adjust for the differences in AM and PM fat percentages. We have a factor system in place from over 30 years ago that does that. However, as cows have changed through genetic selection and through management, those factors have become outdated rather quickly. So it's time to reassess how we should be adjusting the milk, fat, and protein produced on farm and on sample day. And I think ultimately when this project is done and these factors are re-implemented, we will see a herd average fat, protein, and milk that better reflects what the tank cards are saying that herd is doing on any given day. The way that they are going about collecting this data is we're using herds that have electronic metering systems in place. So that way we get a perfect milk sample volume every milking, and we get a timestamp of when that cow came through the parlor. And then we can use that to build the factors off of for milk volume. And at the same time, we're collecting the milk sample with our certified technicians at every milking one day a week. And they're doing that for the first 120 days of a lactation, so 120-day period. And then thereafter, for the rest of that lactation, they'll be collecting a monthly sample. So we'll have some really good data to estimate a lactation curve off of. One thing that I think farmers have realized and are probably now seeing in their data is that lactation curves are becoming flatter with time. And maybe that's probably due to the widespread disuse now of BST. BST product was probably creating higher peaks earlier and then a sharper decline towards the end of lactation. And so now we're seeing a flatter lactation curve with time, and we just don't have maybe the right adjustment factors that are helping to represent the true lactation curve of a cow. So we are the 8th herd nationally to take up this factors project. We're 2 weeks in with our first herd, and the herd that was chosen for the research project is a 550 cow dairy in southeast Minnesota. And we went for the small size first, I'm not going to lie, because it was easier to meet the labor requirement. You can about imagine how hard it is to collect a sample at every milking one day a week, when really our technician force is designed around once monthly testing. So finding enough people and enough labor to carry out this project is an important part of it. And that's why we went for a 500 cow dairy to start with. And this herd, in fact, is a 2X dairy. So a big part of the project really is to go into the 3X dairies first. And that's what they've done in the other 7 factors herds they've recruited throughout the country. But they're also interested in many types of dairies participating in this research. They'll be taking other 2X herds like ours. They have a pretty good mix right now between Holstein and Jersey herds. They'll be looking at some crossbred herds in the future. And then other herds they want to consider later in the pipeline will include some grazing and robotic dairies in addition to the conventional and freestalled dairies as well.
You know, my herd is available for anything. I'm willing to help generate any data for different projects that will help the greater good of farmers. So you count me in. Count me in.
Absolutely. Sounds great.
Okay. Well, thanks, Amy. I think we learned a lot today about lots of different data that DHI can provide to farmers, how to do testing, ear tags, different projects, you name it. So I think it's been very informative for our listeners to hear that there's so many things coming with DHI into the future.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Brad, and I appreciate the chance to talk with you and your listeners. And if there's any way I can help folks out there who might want to know about what we can provide, they can always Google us and call our office. And they can reach out to me personally at amyl@mndhia.org.
Okay, sounds good. So if you ever want to know anything about DHI, contact Amy. Want to know some stuff about research and how we're working with DHI, feel free to let me know. And with that, I think we'll wrap for today. So if you have any comments, questions, or scathing rebuttals, feel free to contact Emily since she's gone today. She handles all the correspondence. And we'll wrap there. So thanks for listening. Bye.